Blog Talk Radio.
Wonderful week. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. Hello, Rex.
Hello.
How are you?
All righty. What's up with you?
You know, not too much. I'm a little tired, but other than that, I'm alive and well, thank God. You know, but it's been a good week. We did the Thanksgiving show last night, and had a quiet Thanksgiving here at my house. Kind of unexpected, but sometimes it works that way. And it's been kind of fun, you know. Another turkey day down, you know. Yeah. What's new with you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Noisy, crowded, and lots of food.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes noisy and crowded can be kind of fun as long as it's not for a long period of time. Yeah, it's kind of nice to get together with people sometimes and catch up, you know. That way you get to stand next to somebody, and you get to stand next to somebody and say, my God, you've gotten tall, you know, things like that. But, yeah, well, I'm sure it was well worth it, Rex, the way I look at it. Yeah, so we have a very large board tonight. Right off the top, we have 10 carryovers from yesterday. 10 carryovers from yesterday. We had wonderful poetry, a fair amount of callers, and yeah, we had a bunch of carryovers, and I said, well, we're going to move them over to tonight, and I have two carryovers, I think, from, well, I'm not sure when, but there were two carryovers from one of the shows I did last. Maybe it was last Friday. And then we had a lot of contributions to the board. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun. Yeah. So, yeah, with that being said, it's just you and me so far. Might just be you and me. You never know. We never know who might show up. But anyone who feels like it can please give a call and let us know when you're ready to call in or hang out or whatever. So we will be here. And let me see now. Let me look over here and see what is happening. I got... Oh, yeah, all the carryovers are all men. No, I'm only kidding.
but,
that's right. You will just put them all up and say, have at it, Rex. Have at it. But, okay. Now I got to just find the room because I lost it just that quick. Isn't that awful?
I'm not going to do it.
I don't know where I put it. I found it. We're playing hide the room tonight. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to let you start off at the show this evening. And our first poem will be, it's called Both the Trees and the Leaves by Olivier. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Both the Trees and the Leaves by Olivier. I've always wanted to be as tall as a tree. Mother told me, grow some leaves, and surely you will be. I made them out of paper and raked them off the lawn. She shouted, these aren't grown, they're just pasted on. So I gathered up some soil and put it on my head, planted seeds and watered them before I went to bed. But when I woke up in the dirt, I went to Mom with feelings hurt. I can't be as tall as a tree because my leaves won't grow. She smiled, pulling me closer, and oh, how I begin to know when she whispered, I believe in you. I felt her warmth, love, and support. That is what leaves do. Leaves support the growing tree, and my mother supports the growing me. I am the tree, and she is my leaf. Like a tree, I am growing through love, support, and belief. So to grow up to be as tall as a tree, I'm going to need more leaves. But like my mother, I'll be there for others to love, support, and believe. I'm thankful for the lesson my mother taught to me. Be both the trees and the leaves and lead the world to harmony. And poem.
Nice read, Rex. This is a cute, I don't really want to say cute, but it's a nice poem. You know, I've always wanted to be as tall as a tree. Mother told me, grow some leaves. And surely you will be. You know, I think that was cute. I made them out of paper and raked them off the lawn. She shouted, those aren't grown. You're just pasting on. It's cute. It's cute there. But then when he says, she smiled, pulled me close, and oh, how I began to know. When she whispered, I believe in you, I felt her warmth, love, and support. That is what leaves do. Leaves support the growing tree. I like how you pulled that in. And it's a wonderful angle because like a tree, I'm growing through love, support, and belief. So to grow to be as tall as a tree, I'm going to need more leaves. You know, you grow your family, you grow your friends, you know, you draw them in and you do, you branch out from there. And I think it's a very clever concept and nicely done. So thank you so much, Olivier. I really like this piece. Well done.
Yeah, I'll work on that. But I think the main idea, because he hits on the back end, through love, support, and belief, so to grow to be as tall as a tree, I'm going to need more leaves. The idea, not just the leaves, those, because he hits on that idea. To love, support, and believe, something that his mother did for him. So having a heart large enough to want to spread that warmth and have those leaves just be another branch of tree of growth, because you hit on that note of harmony in the back end. So you do kind of, it walks in a spiritual tone without actually slapping you in the face with it. It's an idea of growth through harmony in self, as well as those you bring into that that sphere. So nicely done, Olivia.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Let me go see what I have now. The next one, next one, next one, next one. Okay, I'm going to read this one. Copy it. Yes, sirree, bub. Then this one is by Pink Fairy 5. And this is called I Am Grateful for Everything in 2023. Hello, Titus, and hello, Northern Phoenix, by the way. Let me make sure I say hello. I am grateful for everything in 2023 by Pink Fairy 5. This year, I am grateful for health. You do not appreciate it until you lose it, which I did for a couple of weeks. Thank you, lower respiratory infection, for allowing me the empathy to be grateful for health. It is 2023, so I am grateful that I still love my husband. We have been together since 1968 in high school. He is the kindest person I have ever met. He has a keen sense of humor, and he puts up with all kinds of idiocy from me. Sorry. I am grateful for my children and grandchildren. Each of them brings beautifulness to my life. Their individual talents and clever ways delight me. I am grateful they know how to entertain themselves, and they are fantastic citizens and deep thinkers. It is 2023, and I am grateful to my dogs, Sophie and Buddy. Sophie is an old lady who reminds me of my mother-in-law. I loved her so much and miss her. Buddy is a giant pony dog who keeps us guessing, running in and out of his doggy door all night. Our lives are full, and so are our tummies. I am grateful for great food, a wonderful job, my pay, which is a bonus, my coworkers and my boss. I am grateful for computer skills and my talents. Thank you, God, for everything. End quote.
Great, Adrian. Thank you very much. Well, this is,
thanks, Rick.
I love that picture. I enjoy those mirror images of saying something outstanding and having it reflected back at you at a still lakefront. Those are gorgeous pictures. The idea with it, got a lot to be grateful for in 2023. So while there's a whole lot of stuff going on around, it's still nice to note sometimes get thankful for the simple things in life. You got more than most people when it comes to family, friends, neighbors, having a job, one that you enjoy. So those are all great things to have and still sit and have the time, energy, and notation. Hey, there are still simple things than that. Those are the bonuses. Simple things are family and how you watch them grow and continue to grow. So, nicely done, Pink Fairy. Thank you very much. And Gene, what about you?
Wowzers, wowzers, wowzers. I think this was a fabulous piece. I really do. I think that she, great piece reflecting your gratitude. Well written and expressed. I thought she did an awesome job. Each stanza was, I thought, just beautifully done. Because it's nice every now and then to just sit and count your blessings, no matter what they are. But I have to say that I liked the way she tied it up in the end, because that really summed the whole thing up. I am grateful for great food, a wonderful job, my pay, which is a bonus, my coworkers and my boss. I'm grateful for computer skills and my talents. Thank you, God, for everything. And that last line pretty much sums it up.
But I did forget one thing, Sophie and Buddy. I just had a dog named Buddy visit for the last 2 days. It sounds just like the dog that you've got here, keeping everybody on their toes. A giant pony dog? Yeah, he's kind of like that too, although he's a friendly little bugger. And he just keeps everybody guessing with his attitude.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I got a slight distraction here. But I'm back, and I've got it together, I think. Well, I don't know. Usually when I get it together, I forget where I put it. To my bad.
Those springs are a little squeaky there.
Oh, God, yeah, well, can I tell you? I don't know, that's my chair being all squeaky on me. Terrible, terrible. Okay, I'll tell you what. The next piece I'm going to put up is by E.J. Estes. And let me drop it in. And this is called Autumn's Harvest. So, here we go. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
Autumn's Harvest by E.J. Estes. Thanksgiving, a time of gratitude and cheer, when autumn's beauty and harvest draw near. The earth turns crisp with a hint of spice as nature paints a portrait oh so nice. Leaves in gold, red adorns the trees, a tapestry of color swaying in the breeze. The fields are ripe with bountiful crops, attesting to nature's generous stock. Families gather, hearts full of love, sharing laughter and blessings from above. A feast is prepared with care and delight, a table adorned a joyful sight. Turkey and stuffing, pumpkin pie too, the flavors of autumn, a delicious brew. But beyond the food, it's the love that we share, the moments of scandalous beyond compare. We pause and reflect on all that we hold, that blessings and abundance both new and old. For in this season of gratitude and grace, we find warmth and love in every embrace. Let us gather in this season, of thanks, embracing the beauty of autumn's ranks. With hearts full of gratitude, let us rejoice in the blessings of the harvest for the unified voice. And poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great read, Rex. This is a nice piece, beautifully penned, and his thankfulness was well reflected. I liked it. The last two stanzas here, I liked them all. I liked a lot of them. But, we pause and reflect on all that we hold, the blessings in abundance, both new and old. For in this season of gratitude and grace, we find warmth and love in every embrace. Let us gather in this season of thanks, embracing the beauty of autumn's ranks. With hearts full of gratitude, let us rejoice in the blessings of harvest with unified voice. I just thought I thought it just tied it up beautifully, and that's what I liked about that. And I think that this was a wonderful poem by E.J. Estes, a name that is somewhat new to me. I've only seen it within the last week and a half, and just a wonderful poem. So very much enjoyed. Yes.
All right. I like that. You know what this has? It has that kind of that painting by a Norman Rockwell or a magazine cover. You get that impression of something that what most people have forgotten about Thanksgiving, to get together. The games could be involved, but that's usually part of the sideshow, these family gatherings, where jokes, pranks, laughter, and rejoicing for a large family, getting together and sharing in all of those things. And it does kind of harken back to the days when there was a celebration around harvest time. Everybody got into it because it was their lean to for the next, going into the winter season and making it to spring. So this is all about that note of Thanksgiving in the moment, because sometimes those moments are too swift, so you better enjoy them while they're here. And that's what I see. Nicely done, you, Jay. Thank you very much.
Nice. Nice comment, Rex. Okay, this next one I'm going to put up is by Derek 77, and it's called Thanksgiving Hands Work Double. And if AP will send it, there it is. We can read it. Okay. Thanksgiving Hands Work a Double by Derek 77. Aluminum foil rattle and fold over last sweet potato pie. Today these hands work a double well into the night. Hand reaches over sealed turkey and collards. Oven finally naps when knob snaps. While fan keeps watch, I proceed to wash. Toothpaste erased, tested mac and cheese. Sorry. Toasty candle gets blown out. Once finally dressed, keys jangle while dangling on pinky. Thanksgiving feast pleads, what about me? Sorry, I have to work tonight. End poem. Clever.
Great reading. Yes, there's a a little twisted note, bit of humor in this too, because you got to be in the industry to understand when it comes to holidays and everything in between, you always work. It's the nature of the business when it comes to food and beverage, large places. Don't count on holidays because that's the way it works. But yeah, it just does hit on the idea of all that goes into putting that together, whether it's in the food pantry atmosphere or whether it's a large hotel or resort. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it. And those hands, they do. I never had a, let's see, 20 years, I didn't have a meal at home, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, all the holidays, because, hey, you got to work.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's what this gets over.
And thank you very much. Yeah, that note to the bottom end. A funny note we always said to each other, yeah, I got to work tonight. Sorry about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I thought this was a well-done piece. A clever take on the reality of holiday duties. You know, I worked many a holiday myself. I was obligated to work every other holiday, and that I did. And if they needed me, sometimes I worked a couple in a row. Depending, you know, what the deal was. But, yeah, so cooking was always a challenge, trying to get it ready before you go or like waking up in the morning and going, oh, my gosh, what do I have to cook everything, right? And you get with the program. But I think that he did this well. He says, you know, job that I worked, this will be my third year working on Thanksgiving night. So I decided to write something in real life. The food usually is done by the morning. But in this poem, the food was finished a couple of hours before work. So see, a little bit of cheating here. Getting it all done before work. Now, come on. But, you know, no matter when it is, you know, the truth is you have to kind of work it around those obligations of the real world, you know. But nicely done, and thank you so much for sharing with us, Derek. I get it. I do get it. Mm. Gosh, don't mind me. I'm cold. Got the tibbers. Brr. Okay. What do I have for you? What's that, hon? What about potatoes?
After all that meat and potatoes?
Oh, no, not today. Not today. Yesterday was, that's all gone. Okay. The next one I have for you, Rex, is by Joe Braz. And it's called Thanksgiving 1970. Let me put that up. And whenever you're ready.
Oh, there's that picture again. Nice. Thanksgiving, yep. 1970 by Joe Braz. Far north in the Great Woods, colored forest is stripped bare by Thanksgiving. I'm going to start it again. Far north in the Great Woods, colored forest is stripped bare by Thanksgiving. Snow is the norm and not the first of the season. Flurry of activity in the cool morning kitchen. A plastic bread bag filled with crust stiff and dry. Pieces of broken, crumbled, hard, dry bread looked more like something bound for the bird feeder than our meal. An unbroken stream of sounds from a busy kitchen didn't give up its savory aromas until early afternoon. The prep included crushing the stale bread with seasonings, melted butter, and chicken stock. Spiced meat pies with mother-made pie crust, herringbone slashes in their top crust, potatoes peeled and sliced and dropped in a large pot of water ready to boil. Heads of dark green broccoli, corn on the cob, homemade dinner rolls and greased muffin tins, pumpkin pies, apple pie, blueberry pie, the king of the table, an 18-pound turkey that may have seemed enormous to those with less than 17 hungry bellies staring at it. While the snow kept on piling up on the thinnest raw branches, telephone wires, cars and driveways, flat and slanted rooftops, edges, bird baths, doghouses, cornfields, and memories. And poems.
Great read, Rex. And I'd like to welcome Laurent to the show. Hello, Laurent.
Good evening. I thought I was going to be sitting here silent.
No, I usually pass by the studio every once and again, you know, especially if I'm reading and bouncing around. Did you happen to hear the poem, Laurent?
I did.
Would you like to comment?
And I like it. There's a sense of, in the first stanza, of acquainting us with the snow and the time of the season. And it begins with a flurry of activity, which kind of ties back to snow, and begins to hit us with a snow drift, a snow fall, a snow blizzard of items, the crusts, the hard-fried bread, the unbroken stream of sounds, the seasonings, the melted butter, the spicy meat pies, potatoes, peel. It all comes in one large, huge snowfall of description. And then he goes back to the snow in the last stanza and gives us another list of where the snow is piling up. So by naming so many objects, so many things happening and painting those images for us in one large, long, almost uninterrupted stream, it really has the effect of being in a heavy snowfall, which I like.
Great comment there, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. I think your fire just got stolen.
I think that there's wonderful imagery throughout this whole poem. He paints a moving picture, you know, of the images in my mind. You know, it's like watching a short film almost. As Laurent pointed out, it was a wonderful tie-in to the snow and to the activities. But just a really great piece. There's just, I don't even know where I would start. An unbroken stream of sounds from a busy kitchen didn't give up its savory aromas until early afternoon. The prep included crushing the stale bread with seasonings, melted butter and chicken stock, spiced meat pies, mother made pie crusts, herringbone slashes, and their top crusts. And I just wanted to describe this wonderful Thanksgiving meal. And I think it was just really just well done. This reminds me of one of those, I don't know if I want to say Norman Rockwell, but one of those wonderful images of just the table lined with food and, you know, someone walking in carrying a turkey and the family all seated around the table. You know, that's the kind of thoughts that it brings to mind. And I think it was just a great job. So thank you so much, Joe, for sharing with us. I really enjoyed the piece.
Absolutely. I got to go with Laurent's thoughts on this. I think that was perfectly noted with the snowfall angle. And the flurry of activity, got to be a little touch of note of all that activity brings warmth. And the idea of what they have the hitting on everything, even though you got a 17-pound turkey, an 18-pound turkey and 17 hungry bellies, there's still a note that that's just going to be enough meat that way. But all the other items in this, the potatoes, the stuffing, everything else, will make that added note. But this is all about warmth, the warmth of the house, the warmth of the atmosphere. And you don't really get a breath of that until you look into the cold that Laurent was picking out with all the activity in snow. So nicely done there, Joe. Thank you.
Absolutely. Boy, am I chilling. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to put this next one up for you. This is by Stanley B. Previtt. It's called Thanksgiving. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Thanksgiving. I stand in awe of God, at his creation. So many beautiful things surround me. His things. Gifted to us. The dark face of the autumn pond reflects the yellowed willow leaning somberly over its bank. Its leaves, shed and curled, glide with grace upon the glassy surface. Beyond, a golden field contrasts the eastern cedars in their bold green cloaks, ever watchful as the countryside is lulled into slumber. The sun has found a more southerly path, a shortcut, you might say, as it looks in on this place with less persistence, its warmth diminished, yet coaxing still a low redolence from the browning leaves, the fragrance of the season. I give thanks to him, the living God, who has provided all of these things for us to marvel and to enjoy. His mastery of the changes that refresh and renew life, and especially for my renewal through his only Son, Jesus Christ. End poem. Great
reading along. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, what do you think?
I think that this is just a beautiful piece. Absolutely. It has beautiful imagery throughout and such a prayerful note to it. The sun has found a more southerly path, a shortcut, you might say, as it looks in on this place with less persistence, its warmth diminished, yet coaxing still a low redolence from the browning leaves, the fragrance of the season. And then at the end it has it's a beautiful, beautiful ending to this narrow piece in that last stanza. So just a fabulous, fabulous take, Stanley, and I thank you so much for sharing with us. It's a wonderful write for, Thanksgiving. Absolutely beautiful.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
This has marvelous flow, and it has a very spiritual aspect to it. It begins and ends with mentions of God. In fact, at the end, it almost seemed like a prayer. I almost said amen to the last line, to his only Son, Jesus Christ. Amen just popped into my head. I held it back. The way he expresses himself, the dark face of the autumn pond, reflects the yellowed willow leaning somberly over its bank, its leaves shed and curled, vibe with grace upon the glossy surface. It's such a smooth flow throughout, and the descriptions are brief yet strong in their particulars. The sun has found a more southerly path, a shortcut, you might say. I like that. That was quite delightful. As it looks on in this place with less persistence, his way with words is excellent in it, and the length fits the subject matter completely. Now, whether or not you're religious, I guess it doesn't matter, because even non-religious people can be moved by words of belief and spirit. Excellent piece.
Absolutely, great comment. And you're right, this does walk a nice... I like the contrast, the opposite, too. You've got that the dark face of the autumn pond, yes, but you've got the reflection of the yellow willow, and leaning somberly over its bank, its leaves shed and curled. Nice touch there. Again, glide with grace upon the glassy surface. So he's offering up both sides of that equation. You look at the beauty, even though it's, say, coming on dead winter, you still find those notes of lustrousness that kind of shine in the moment, like that new path his son just showed you. You might not notice it during a full bloom. Now you've seen it, you might want to explore that later down the road. So this, not just the darkness that it offered up, it's both sides, the light and darkness. You can walk either way, but you'll end up more with the with ugliness on the dark angle instead of looking upon the beauty that's held before you. So, and you're right, Laurent, this can walk either way. It doesn't have to walk religious. It walks in the simplicity of surroundings and what you feel in the moment. So, nicely done, Stanley. Thank you.
Nice. Very nice. Let me show what I have. Okay, next one I'm going to put up. I have to say, Richard, I'm sorry I did not play this last night. Time really got away from me. So this one next is called Thankful for You by Richard Weissman. And this was written for his wife. It was her birthday yesterday. So here we go.
Thankful for You by Richard Weissman. The auditory hum hidden within this life's silence pervades as you and I smile, knowing love behind the eyes, between each other and within ourselves. An ocean wells up. The Great Spirit revives and breathes, embracing and enveloping us. How wonderful that an autumnal vibration of thanks is shared throughout this land on the anniversary of your birth. You teach of voices in the leaves, echoes whispering in the wind, and of truth within. I've seen eternity reflected in your gaze, and I'm honored to walk this path with you in love. End of poem.
Great read, Richard. Thank you for the SoundCloud. I very much appreciate it. All right, Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
I'm glad that this is the length that it is, because it carries more impact and more strength when you hit your notes early and strong, and then cut it off once you've made your point. This is a laudatory poem of love and of understanding. It talks about the auditory hum hidden within this life's silence pervades. That is the metaphor that he uses in the second stanza. An ocean wells up. The great spirit revives and breathes, embracing and enveloping us. That auditory hum can be, it could be a mist, it could be clouds, it could be any number of things that obscure or envelop, better said. But he uses an ocean, and I like that much better, because an ocean surrounds you completely when you go under the water. You are completely embraced. The thanks that he gives for the happy circumstance of a birthday on this particular day or at this particular time of year is always nice when your birthday hits on a particular date or on a particular date. To me, the most poignant and most, I don't want to say complex, but it suggests a complexity. You teach of voices in the leaves, echoes whispering in the wind, and of truth within, seeing eternity reflected in your gaze. It's almost as if he's gifting his wife powers of far-seeing and understanding that perhaps he does not have, or that most of us don't have, the ability to hear what is around you that is hidden and silent to most people. And that is an exceptional bit of understanding, marvelous piece.
I like that. Thank you very much.
All right, Gene, what about you?
I thought this was a beautiful and loving piece, a wonderful tribute to Pam from Richard. His thankfulness for her in his life is just so well expressed here. I love these two stanzas. How wonderful that an autumnal vibration of thanks is shared throughout this land on the anniversary of your birth. You teach of voices in the leaves, echoes whispering in the wind, and the truth within, which I've seen eternity reflected in your gaze, and I'm honored to walk this path with you in love. I think that's just beautiful. Just beautiful. So, Richard, I want to thank you for sharing this with us. And as I say, I am sorry I did not get to play it last night. But, yeah, an incredible piece.
Excellent. Thank you. I got to go with that that second stanza, an ocean wells up. The great spirit revives and breathes, embracing and enveloping us. There's a note to finding their own Shangri-La in that moment, that place of peace and harmony where even with without the sort of voices that he offers up in the first one, that from the steady note of what runs between the two of them, and then washes and embraces them in that second stanza. I do like the third one. And the back one, kind of, you hit on that offering. She offers up something that he doesn't have or doesn't understand, maybe. But that last stanza, I kind of hit with the idea that she sees the balance in voice that helps keep him to where he is, finds himself when he writes just like this. She kind of hits on that idea of me of being that the easy ocean if something troubles in the moment. So I like that as well. I see that, Richard.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, Rex, I'm going to put this next one up for you, and I'm going to step away for a second, so if I'm not back, feel free to start comments without me. Okay, here we go, and this is called The Meaning of Thanksgiving by Liquid Mind Forever.
The Meaning of Thanksgiving by Liquid Mind Forever. We've yet to learn, though we spurn return to warfare and greed, see the soil of blood loss cross the sign of hope across our chest. Can we divest our shame as we proclaim Thanksgiving's creed? Acknowledge those who love those we cherish, though we fail the rest. With a true Thanksgiving, one would not, could not obsess over war, nor storm the Capitol or release nuclear weapons, leave that scar. We train our youth to shoot guns, but how far would we go to peace? Who will be the first to release their aim to name or ease and cease? There's much to be thankful. There's much to be thankful for, but we cannot forget the bane of war. The aim to name, to reign, to instill fear and pain is a disgrace. This taste, this haste, this waste of life leaves a hell of a scar. Perhaps some choose to close their eyes, forget war, hoping to erase. Thanksgivings to honor our homeland, not forget the cost of freedom. In closing our eyes, we're victims of what's lost. And gone. Something's a little bit shorter for Liquid. What do you think, Laurent?
Well, it's titled The Meaning of Thanksgiving, but it seems to lament everything that's wrong in the world and not really celebrate Thanksgiving itself. And that's one way of looking at the holiday. It's so hard to shut out what's wrong in the world today, especially since the troubles of humanity seem to be accelerating in ways that are quite frankly scary. Democracy is under attack. War is taking place in several critical areas of the world, but we can't really let that, I think, cloud the moment, because then we lose, I think, the meaning of Thanksgiving, because all that's wrong is so much that's good, so much potential yet to fulfill. I think we need to remember that almost more than what's wrong, without denying what's wrong, without forgetting what's wrong still. A day for celebration, not regrets.
Well said. I like that. I kind of agree with you, because if we, like you said, we go that path of forgetting things or putting them to bed for permanency, so to speak, we end up repeating the same stupidity over and over again. Why? Because in between generations, nobody gets taught the right things, or you move in new directions, so to speak. But the idea, yeah, you're right, the idea within this is, even though you are thankful, you should not forget that which else is going on, but still celebrate the life around the table is a great way to give thanks. So, nicely done, Liquid. Thank you very much. Gene, you come back yet?
Well, I got back about half a minute ago. I'm going to have to leave a written comment on this because I have to read it yet. So, I apologize. Okay. The next poem I have is called Thankful, and this is by Oshini Creations. So let me go ahead and put this up. Okay, here we go, and I have an audio for this. So give me 1 second. Here we go.
This poem is entitled Be Thankful by Oshini. Right. There's a man in the Bible who goes by the name Joseph. He was cast into a pit by his brothers, then afterwards sold into slavery. At first, one may think there is nothing in these circumstances to be thankful, but make no decision yet. Let's go further into the story. being sold into slavery are Lord Joseph. The experience a process filled with situations that were specially designed to build him into a person God could use to preserve life. This example is evidence that contained within its seemingly bad situation are keys or opportunities that are purposed to preserve life. Therefore, this goes to show, no matter how bad your situation, within it, there is always something for which to be thankful. Therefore, this goes to show, no matter how bad your situation, within it, there is always something for which to be thankful.
Nice.
Great read, Jeannie. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Dean, what thought would you give me?
You know, I thought this was nicely done, and this was based on the Charles Dickens quote. Where is it? There is always something in which to be thankful. You know, because I've even said that in adversity we can find things to help us to grow, lessons to carry forward, lessons to learn from. So some people would argue that with me, and I don't want to argue with anybody, you know. I just think that there's some truth to that. Hard times can make us better people. We learn empathy and many other things in the sadnesses in life. But I think that this is definitely a really nicely done piece. I like how she kept her time with clicking her fingers. It was clever. And yeah, I think it was just a nicely written piece. Very well done. Thank you, Oshin.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Well, in reference to what Jean mentioned about adversity, if you have a dull blade and you want to make it sharper and useful, you take that blade and you begin rubbing it against the stone to create extreme friction and heat and breaking bits of steel away and losing bits of what you have until finally you're left with something that is sharp and keen, able to do the work. So yes, that's a kind of adversity, if you will, and it's that kind of adversity in life that sharpens us and makes us stronger, makes us better able to do what we need to do. Being sold into slavery is kind of an extreme example, if you will, yet it is from the Bible. It's the situation. I love the English language. I think it's a beautiful thing to hear it pronounced. And I enjoy hearing it, I think, most in the accents, strong accents. I think it brings out the beauty of the language in a way that sometimes we miss if we just read it normally. I'm a particular sucker for the accent of this, the way it was presented, snapping of the fingers, keep the beat, the heavy emphasis on the endings and beginnings of certain words, stretch them or shorten them to pick up a little bit more of a rhythm, sometimes of a rhyme. All in all, I really, really enjoyed this piece.
Great comment, Laurent. That's a keeper. And you're right. I've heard Oshini before, so she does have an accent. I believe it's Jamaican. And I think the snapping of the fingers on this one was kind of to get her to slow down a bit so she could really get her point across. Because she's got ones I've heard before she speaks, certain words get emphasized based on, I guess, the way she speaks normally. So I think this was an idea of trying to keep everything right in the moment. by slowing herself down a little bit. I may be wrong, but that was just a thought. Anyway, you're right. Your comments spots this up perfectly, so nicely done. Thank you, Oshin.
Absolutely. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to put this next one up for you. It's called Thankful for Moments by Lockdown Larks. Whenever you're
ready. All right. Thankful for moments. There's always something to be thankful. There's always something for which to be thankful. Most Dickens. Thankful for each breath of air, for since the time of nearly naught, when Lady Luck for once played fair, rescuing me from many a blood clot. Thankful for a special one who chose to look out for me. He that is one in a million who walked into my destiny. Thankful for this food we share, so much of it taken for granted. Those who know the what and where and how to rear it from planted. Thankful for my golfing friends whose banter is less than clean cut and profanities that seem to make amends for perpetually missing that simple cut. Thankful for those over there whose hearts have been beating too. Sending one here that did forbear, we send our thanks to you. I am most thankful for those present here to be part of your time and space, not least to share with you a beer and moments that we cannot replace. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what do you think?
You know, I thought this was a good piece by Lockdown Larks. I thought it was nicely penned, and just well done. It's about the simple things in life. You know, Lady Luck, well, thank God Lady Luck, you know, for once played fair, rescuing him from many a blood clot. That's a blessing right there. But, you know, one who chose to look out for me, she that is one in a million who walked into my destiny. You know, that's another blessing. But when he starts talking about golf, thankful for my golfing friends whose banter is less than clean cut and profanities seem to make amends for perpetually missing that simple putt. I don't know, it's looking at life just in a different perspective sometimes, you know. It's good to have friends that you can golf with, but the people who take care of you on an everyday basis and keep you strong or healthy or just kind of in check sometimes is an important thing. And I think that it was just nicely penned and put together. So nice job, Lockdown Larks, and thanks for sharing.
All right. Thank you, Jean. All right, Laurent, how about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, it's, I have to congratulate Lars on, Marks, excuse me, on this poem, but especially on the first stanza, which is extremely creative and very artful in the way that it's presented. And I agree with Jean, it's the simplicity of the small things that really do make up the vast majority of our life. I mean, probably 99% of our life is even and mundane, if you will. Maybe 5%, 1%, who knows. In most cases, are those moments that are perhaps overstimulating, shall we say. But yes, I think the thanks for the basic things like food and friends and moments that we cannot replace is really what we should be thankful. Excellent.
All right. Thank you, Laurent. I'm going to go with that first stanza is really important because you hit on that notion of when Lady Luck once played fair, rescuing me from a blood clot. So a moment of understanding how short life is. Kind of thankful for his wife, who's been there throughout all everything and anything. And from then, Gene hit on that perspective notes because now you're looking a little bit further and deeper. You get that third and fourth stanza. Thankful for this food we share, so much we've taken for granted. To those who know the what and where and how the rare from planted, there's the idea of thanking the farmers, the herders, the wranglers, most people don't think about. And then again, thankful for the dolphin friends and that note of understanding, seeing them in a different light and understanding them within that light and know, hey, they're friends. As Gene said, that idea of those people who surround you when you're in need the most. And those at the back end of the theater on that, and moments that we cannot replace, those moments can't be replaced. So you take care in that notation with those people that are special. So, Larks, nicely done. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, now the next piece of that was it for the Thanksgiving poetry, and I want to thank everyone who wrote for that contest and shared such wonderful pieces. They were all fabulous and very much enjoyed. So now we're going to move on. This next piece is called Take Me Back to the Past by Darkened Auras. Let me give this one a read. Take Me Back to the Past by Darkened Auras. She was feeling homesick, yearning for the olden days, but so much has changed now in so many different ways. She stopped by her old schoolhouse, once a small one-story place, now three stories tall and half a block in space. When she pulled up to her old home, her mind was filled with woe. The place where she was born burned down, what looks like years ago. She went to her old stomping ground. It filled her heart with pain. The once lively amusement park, now overtaken by terrain. The roller coaster she once rode to feel the wind rush through her hair was now breaking away in a state of disrepair. The tallest Ferris wheel at the top where none could see, she had her first kiss. Now it leans against a tree. She sits down on a bench, and as she starts to cry, she can't understand how this place could close or why. Suddenly, she sees a girl, and almost like a dare, the girl motions for her to go inside of there. She looked where she was pointing, a place that brought her fear. It was old, forgotten funhouse that she avoided every year. The little girl ran inside. She chased without a second thought. The girl was trying to show her the answers that she sought. When she finally made her way out, she was startled by what she found. Crowds of people everywhere and loud music all around. Suddenly, it was back to normal. You have to leave it behind, the little girl said to her. All the good times are in your mind. She said, I can't just leave it. This place meant so much to me. The little girl took her hand. There's something you need to see. She led her down a forest path to a clearing with a lake. The beauty that you see here was caused by one mistake. It used to be a dumping ground for the amusement park. Then the roller coaster derailed one day and made a lasting mark. The park lost many patrons and soon closed its gates for good. People cleaned up the dumping ground and helped out all they could. You can't go back in time and you can't live in the past, but the memories of long ago are sure to always last. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Ron, why don't we kick it with you? What'd you think of that?
Yeah, I think this really tends to make a very strong point in the end. The first stanzas seem to deal with a dismantling of memories. When she pulled up to her old home, her mind was filled with woe. Place where she was born burned down, what looks like years ago. And then the visit to the amusement park where she had her first kiss, and to see that all go away. She sits down on a bench and she starts to cry. She can't understand how this place could close or why. Then the important point is made to the young girl that she meets is that her reaction, there is an equal and opposite reaction. In this case, the dismantling of her memories, so to speak, the dismantling of the amusement park, created something beautiful off to the side, the lake, and a clearing. The beauty that you see here was caused by one mistake. It explains, and by the way, the way that she presents it, has a great flow and rhythm and fine rhyme that makes the story very, very easy to put across. And having that roller coaster derail and allow people to clean up the former dumping ground was something that you have to appreciate in the present. It doesn't mean that you can't retain the memories of long ago, which, as she states, are always sure to last. Very moving piece.
Great comments. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I was trying to compose this thought. I thought it was nicely penned. And so often people can't change in the passing of time. You know, you feel that because things have crumbled or fallen apart from long ago, that it's a terrible thing. But as here, you know, it's the memories. They live on with you forever. You know, circumstance, things break down, things fall apart, things aren't maintained. They have no place in the future. You know, as much as we would like for those things to continue on, a lot of times it doesn't. And not just this amusement park, but it holds true in many aspects of life. Different things that have passed and you know, gone their merry way, so to speak. You know, you can still carry those good things forward and not hold on to those actual pieces of the past, you know. It's like that little tchotchke I have over here on the drawer. Do I need that? No. Do I like it? Well, maybe. But it reminds me of something. But that memory is still there with or without the tchotchke. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's just the way what I got from this. And I think that she said it nicely, adding to the details of the past and, you know, the sadness that was there. But it stays with her all along, so she just has to realize that. So I think that was nicely done.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like what Ron had to hit on, the idea of the disconnect mm-hmm. from her head, because it opens up like that note of like a Twilight Zone episode. You go back home, things have changed to the point where you don't recognize the place anymore, and then you wonder if how you existed within this space. It's almost as if you're being erased because your home's burnt down years ago. The your old stomping grounds, the fear that was always there, that was a big part of your life. That is doesn't look anything like remembered. It's just an abandoned heap now. And the idea of dipping into a past, maybe there was a little break in thought where she needed that angle of going home to find out who she really was, maybe. And she's finding out that, hey, that little girl is her, the back part of her memory, reminding her, you have these memories. You got to let them go because they're gone on the outside. But having these memories doesn't negate what happened to you in your childhood. That's still there. So you have to make new ones to take in those gaps of going home that don't get filled back in again. I like it. Thanks, Christina.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Okay, Rex, I'm coming back to you with this piece by Jody Mountain, which is called 17454. I'm only kidding. Tale of Tenacity by Jody Mountain. So whenever you're ready.
Tale of Tenacity by Jody Mountain. In the heart of the storm, I lost my way. Shadows grew long as I begged for the day. Once a warrior, now a whisper in the wind. My flame flickered, my patience thinned. The arena that cheered, now silent and cold. Stories of glory, tales once bold. I wore my scars like a tattered cloak. In the mirror of despair, I constantly spoke. Scars were many, the pain was real, yet with every step, I began to heal. From the crucible emerged a steel, a warrior's heart with relentless zeal. I dusted off dreams, stood tall, took a chance dance. In this dance of life, I embraced the chance. With every setback and every fall, I found strength I never knew at all. I climbed from the depths, a relentless fight burning, brighter, igniting the nights. The world watched as I rewrote the tale. In the book of life, I set sail. With a heart aflame and a steady gaze,
I conquered demons, left the maze. Once lost, now found, I stood my ground. In the symphony of life, I found my sound. The arena roared alive once more. I reclaimed my title, even the score. From ashes to glory, I rose with might. A comeback story, a lifetime's light. And poem. Nice. Laurent, I'm going to kick it with you. What'd you think?
Well, I like the piece. From the shadow, one sees a boxer falling on his knees, yet the shadow is triumphant. Dale Tenacity gives us a clue. I've always enjoyed most the tales of a superior athlete or sporting figure of any kind, I guess, who, having achieved, suddenly loses it all. And at that point is caught between giving up and managing to rise once more through sheer force of will and overcome those things that have torn him down. The arena that cheered now sound and cold, stories of glory, tales once bold. I wore my scars like a tattered cloak in the mirror of despair. I constantly spoke, it's so hard. Climb from those depths, yet climb from those depths, he does. A relentless fight, burning brighter, igniting the night. The world watched as I rewrote the tale in the book of life. I sat still. There are probably a dozen or more names that could come to my mind immediately about such stories if I had anything like it with memory. But I don't, I'm sure. Rex can rattle off a half a dozen very quickly. But I liked it because I like the kind of story that it is. And I thought that it was well written, well presented, and very well rhymed.
Nice.
Thank you, Laurent. All right, Gene, what about you?
I thought this is a wonderful write. Well, very well done. And so well stated. I grabbed at these stanzas. With the heart of flame and a steady gaze, I conquered demons, left the maze. Once lost, now found, I stood my ground. In the symphony of life, I found my sound. The arena roared alive once more. I reclaimed my title, even the score. From ashes to glory, I rose with might. A comeback story, a lifetime's light. You know, I loved it, and I said, never give up, you know. Because that's really it. You know, you don't give up. You just keep fighting. Keep on going. Keep plugging away at it. You'll get it. And, yeah, so I really liked the piece. And thanks, Jody, for sharing with us. Great job with this one.
Hi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I like that note with the boxer up. That had me thinking of Rocky, just as most of this does. It also had me thinking of Gladiator, once being the famous general, yet relegated to the need of appealing to the crowds by becoming that gladiator and then finding glory once more in standing up for Rome against a dictator that was demented and cruel. So it does hit on everything. Everybody wants to hit that note of being able to make a difference twice, so to speak. You're on top of the world. You get older and you wonder about those glory days. So can you stand once more and defeat those demons in front of you, crawl out of the maze to find that which you were bound for? So this walk is a great metaphor as well. No matter what is hurled at you, there is a little bit of warrior spirit in everybody. All they have to do is take it by the horns and ride it for what it's worth. All right, we're coming back on you.
Okie dokie. Well, this piece is called Rhymes of the Sea by Teresa Streshenkoff. And let me give this one a read. Ceaseless serration of surf, sided in moon silver, relentless of incoming breakers, smooth liquid curve to the far horizon, brought to any sense of peace but a welcome numbness, bone white in the glare of the hot sun, scattering tiny shells of the dead. Rhythmic rituals distracted entirely from the architecture of life, cast of the forming shore, an unsparing fire flashed through the debris. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Rob, we're going to start with you, please.
So we are we? Excuse me. Rhymes of the Sea immediately draws me to the title. To me, it's the breaking of the surf. It's sound, the horizon, what surrounds the, and I guess it is that smooth sense of peace, which is called a welcomed numbness, bone white in the glare of a hot sun scattering tiny shells of the dead. What was beautiful in the first stanza seems a little different in the second, because bone white in the glare of the hot sun scattering tiny shells of the dead is a little bit of a different tone than the first, although entirely accurate. Rhythmic rituals distracted entirely from the architecture of life is going to deal with the day-to-day of human existence and what we do and where we live and how. The cast of the foaming shore, an unsparing fire flashed through the debris. Again, a slight note, a slight change in tone, if you will. An unsparing fire flashed through the debris. Is it the debris that one finds on the beach? Is it the debris that is occupying our life? I'm not entirely sure. But I like the way she constructed this. I like the poem.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, what do you think?
I thought it was nicely penned by Teresa. ceaseless duration of surf. Sun glided, the moon silvered. You know, she has a good use of alliteration throughout, and I thought that there was good imagery. Well, you know, and I have to, you know, bone white in the glare of the hot sun, scattering tiny shells of the dead. You know, she paints quite a picture here of what I would see on the beach, you know, with the thoughts that go with. I think that, yeah, just nice work, Teresa, and thanks for sharing with us. Yeah, wish I knew the inspiration. Nice job.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. I do like, you know, the rhyme, the ease of, and that's what the second stanza brought to any sense of peace, but a welcome numbness, bone white in the glare of the hot sun, scattering tiny shells of the dead. So it's a notation of both life and death in the moment, and how the sea always keeps churning. She goes on with that. Rhythmic rituals distracted entirely from the architecture of life. Cast a foaming shore and an unsparing fire flashed through the debris. I'm going with something in the moment with that last stanza. Something in that moment kind of sparked her onto something else. That unsparing fire flashed through the debris kind of hits as an idea or an image flashing across one's brain. So, thank you, Teresa.
Absolutely.
All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Thank you for getting my name tonight. You're just like everybody else now. I'm always forgetting my name. It's all right. Okay, Lorana, I'm going to put this next piece up for you. It's called Trees of Memories Lost by Daniel Descino. Whenever you're ready.
All righty. Trees of memories lost. Old forests hide the most legends lost. Old tree limbs contort and twist through the air, and sunlight struggles to illuminate. I stop at almost fully overgrown and devoured paths, such a vague memory of this path. But destination is lost, and leaves fall every year, countless. I really don't want to count them. They cover my footprints. I love my ancient forest walks. I feel alone, but safe. Alone, safe deep within. There is no outside world. I think the trees remember, but they never speak. They just protect if I do not disturb. And they leave me in peace to walk the path I choose. End poem.
great read along. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're starting with you.
You know, I think this, well, yeah, if I could digest and bring it back so quickly, it would be wonderful. Trees of Memories Lost. I like the title right there. And I like his thoughts on the forest and the paths and the trees themselves. I'm trying to figure out where I want to start here in this book. I love my ancient forest walks. I feel alone but safe, alone, safe deep within. There is no outside world. I think the trees remember, but they never speak. They just protect if I do not disturb. It's you're in the forest and the trees see everything. But they're not telling anybody anything. I guess that's where my thoughts are taking me. There's a sense of safety and I don't want to say secrecy, but it's just a safe haven of sorts in my mind. I think the trees remember, but they never speak. They just protect if I do not disturb, and they leave me in peace to walk the path I choose. It's they don't interfere, they just observe, kind of. And I think it's a great piece, and I love I love where it takes me in my I don't know if I want to say emotions, but it carries me someplace. It makes me feel a certain way. That's what I like about it the most. But I think that it was a good piece by Dan. I like a lot of his work. He always has a little bit of a deep thought going on there, and I think that's wonderful. So, again, Dan, great job, and thanks for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
I found it entrancing. At first, I almost wanted to make references to the Ents and the Lord of the Rings, but they were not immediately friendly. Yet at the same time, if you didn't mess with them, they didn't really mess with you. It would leave you alone, but not immediately friendly, so I dismissed that. But I was entranced by that first line, Old Forest, I, the most legends lost. I was all set to hear about something mighty, and yet we have the simple voyage of a person walking in the forest as if it were a cocoon or a return to a womb of some kind. And he's been there before. I love my ancient forest walks. I feel alone, but safe, alone, safe, deep within. There is no outside world. The dark of the forest, where memories live, one assumes, allows one to, well, be like the trees. I think the trees remember, but they never speak. And as you walk any path that you choose in that ancient forest, where you have been before, that is exactly what happens. You remember, and you don't have to speak. And you can walk wherever you want, which is another way of saying, I guess, you can remember anything you wish. It's a lovely poem. And I agree with Gene. It makes me feel some kind of a way. Very nice.
Great comment. Excellent. I like the literality in this. But also, whether Dan made it a part of it, I'll go with a metaphoral angle on this. The old forest, it's on trees of memories lost. Then right up front, old forest height, the most legends lost. Old tree rims contort and twist through the air, and sunlight struggles to illuminate. Hitting on the idea of walking through one's own mind itself. The overgrown and devoured path, such a vague memory of this path. A destination is lost, and the leaves keep falling every year. Is that notation to losing oneself in one's mind because of those little those paths going back? You either disturb on the one hand, which creates a problem, both physical and mental, and as those that itch to remember kind of hits with the idea. Those trees are there for a reason, they keep you from those. And if you don't disturb them, then you end up leaving you at peace because you're not digging into things that have been locked away. and maybe for legitimate reasons or for hard-won reasons, it doesn't really matter. But the idea is the mind will protect itself even if you go walking through the forest late in the evening. Nicely done, Dan. Thank you.
Okie dokie. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is It Would Seem for the Moment by Titus. So let me pop that up. And Oshin said, hello, hello to Rex. What is this thing doing? There we go. Okay, and I have an audio for this. That's me. I got it. Okay, here we go. Well, let me try it again.
It would seem for the moment, truth pertaining the romance of a lifetime and the last dance I did not anticipate, our specular should spin. Becoming molecular, it was an elusive woman thing. A love at first sight, it would seem for the moment as vivid a descry. With one's affections I cannot lie, ours was a love in a cold climate. Have once seen now a sublimate words, they'll supersede any worth of mention. If albeit of this earth to speak of seeing and retrieving, what was found before believing, good guidance from my own eyes, enough to take hold of why lies cannot be found nor to be erased, my heart remains as half crazed to compare how love gives a wise peripheral, the stars this paradise.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is much appreciated.
All right, Gene.
What do you think? But you got to unmute first.
Yeah, another fabulous piece by Titus. I love to listen to him read his work because it always has that wonderful, old world to it. I don't know if it's the accent or the music in the accent or his choice of words, which it could be all three combined. Truth pertaining the romance of a lifetime and the last dance. I did not anticipate how specular she'd spin, becoming molecular. It was an elusive woman theme, a love at first sight, it would seem. For the moment, as vivid as descry, with one's affections, I cannot lie. I don't know. I think that also is a love in a cold climate. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that it sounded beautiful, and it reads well, and it's just a beautiful tale told. So excellent job, and thank you for sharing with us, Titus. As always.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
Sophisticated. Emotive. Clever. Very, very clever. The wordplay in this is up to par, let's say, for Titus. Sometimes I think occupies his own little cloud from which he writes beautiful poetry. Truth pertaining the romance of a lifetime. Strong words. I did not anticipate how specular she'd spin, becoming molecular. A specular refers to a mirror, so she spins and gives off light, becoming molecular. It was love at first sight. And on down through is just rich language. For instance, if albeit of this earth to speak of seeing and retrieving what was found before believing, the good guidance from my eyes, it's absolutely spectacular. But what I really like, that lies cannot be found nor be erased. My heart remains as half crazed to compare our love gives a wise peripheral, the stars, this paradise, as if to say, that she outshines the stars, yet at the same time compares her to stars, which are, well, lovely, etc. Just so well written. You kind of just love this kind of poem.
Yes,
Yes, absolutely great song. Between the picture and the music he opened up for, I went with old black and white film without the sound, and these little tidbits just offered up as a screen notice for the audience to read into. I thought of Charlie Chaplin with the guy in the picture there, and that those moments of unbelief that he could find something like this.
And not modern and woman.
Yeah, I know, but I couldn't help the thought of it kind of looks something like it would be from out back a little bit, a little further in the past, that notation to read and believe in the moment and understand what is, because you're seeing it unfold before your eyes. I like that note. Thank you, Titus.
Okie dokie.
All right, Jim. We're back on you.
Okay, the next one I'm going to put up is called Frostbite by Jessica C. Wheeler. And I'm going to give this one a read. Yeah, if you make it super huge so I can read it. Frostbite by Jessica C. Wheeler. I do not stomp nor lightly tread, just walk out onto the thin ice. There, you stand waiting, a soft crack spread beneath your sturdy stool, but I kick it away to leave you hanging. My chilling indifference reflected on the ice, playing quick to drop you on a yo-yo string. Wearing your coat all year in my winter while you belong under the sun on solid ground. I'll stay cold, lying beside you. You will linger without covers, freezing next to me, wearing thin until you slip into frozen sheets. Then I'll rise to walk on what you've become, the ice cracking beneath my careless steps. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'll get frostbite on this one. Laurent, how about you? What do you think?
Oh, not to try to be clever, but man, this is cold. My Lord. You want to talk about chilling indifference? The way? Look, I'll stay cold laying beside you. You will linger without covers, freezing next to me, wearing thin until you slip into frozen sheets. Then I'll rise to walk in what you've become with the nice cracking beneath my careless steps. Wow. That hits the mark thunderously. Gotta admire it.
Great. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, you read it. All about you.
You know, I thought this was great. I could have quoted every line that Laurent did. I actually was going to start with just a little bit above that, where it says, wearing your coat all year in my winter while you belong on solid ground. Then it's, I'll stay cold lying beside you. I thought there were wonderful lines, and I thought well expressed. Let me see now. I mean, I do not stomp nor lightly tread, just walk out onto thin ice. There, you stand waiting as soft cracks spread beneath your sturdy stool. I kick it away to leave you hanging, my chilling indifference reflected on the ice, playing quick to drop you on a yo-yo string. I don't know. It's cold. It's cold. Very, very well said there, Laurent. It's a great poem, and I think Jessica did a wonderful job expressing her thoughts in this, and it's clever. Nicely done.
Absolutely. I like the title, and Laurent's lead into this is chilly. Definitely it is chilly. I got to say, this kind of brings note to bringing cubism to life and understanding the full effect of how that works. Boy, you talk about being betrayed and then the full iceberg effect afterwards. Oof. Nicely done, Jessica. That definitely was. There's a lot more beneath the water than it spoke.
Mm-hmm. Okay, give me 2 seconds. Because I got to put this there before I forget it. I have one I have to come back for. I can't come back for more than that because then I'll be lost all day. I'll be saying, what am I supposed to do?
Oh.
Okay, no. Let me see now. I'm there. Okay, the next one I'm going to put up is by Stelina. And then I'll get you after this one. Where is it? Here it is. Okay. And this is called To a Pretentious Pedant. Pedant by Stelina. And I have an audio for this one. So, here we go. I think. Here it is.
You may be considered cerebral when you partake in a convo and love to appear arcane to those you do not know. You're a despot of good diction and eloquent expression, impeccable inference, which makes a good impression. With haughty demeanor and an acrimonious sneer, you look down on those whom you love to mock and jeer for their gaping grammar gaffes, and in absolute abject terror are almost apoplectic at each sorry spelling error. Waxing lyrical on phoneme stress and division, sardonically smirking at faux pas derision. You never can condone such an egregious abomination. You are infallible when it comes to perfecting pronunciation. You love to cast aspersions on others' inferior schooling just because they don't follow your certain type of ruling. You put such store on perfect speech, which is fine, but it doesn't make you a genius, just a superior swine, whose common sense is a quality that you do not possess. Wisdom grown with experience, which I must confess, you never have displayed, speaking as a general rule, making you appear like a complete and utter fool. Your foot is often in your mouth, you never think twice. Instead of putting others down, could you simply be nice and share your unique knowledge in a diplomatic way? Put your brain in gear, first consider what you say, for it is far more important how you word a comment. Instead of showing off your prowess, concentrate on content. How many politicians reel off their fancy speeches, yet their every good intention never actually reaches the plight of so many on an actual daily level. Still never mind in their rhetoric, we can always revel. If their fancy words were dollar bills, we'd all be rich indeed. And if they could solve all problems, no one would be in need. Intelligence is born of more than what is found in a book, and at the end of the day, no one gives a flying...
Great read, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Much appreciated. Gene, why don't we start with you? Mute?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was a little distracted. This was a wonderful write by Stelina, as are so many of hers. I love her use of alliteration throughout, as always. There was a slight touch of sarcasm and humor throughout. And the music was a great choice for the background. And something about it all just pulled together and tied together beautifully. Wonderful job, Stelina. I would love to pull something, but I would have to go and like kind of do surgery to pull something out of the rest of it. But definitely a wonderful, wonderful piece. Very well done. Yeah.
All right, Laurent, how about you?
Waxing lyrical on phonemes, stress and illusion, sardonically smirking at Faux-Pas with derision. You never can condone such an egregious abomination. You are infallible when it comes to perfecting pronunciation. Clothes do not make the man or his speech his intelligence. I love this. It was clever, erudite, sarcastic, ironic. It's all wrapped up in excellent rhyme and presentation. Made my day.
Absolutely. This is a nice put down that you can roll in a literary magazine onto your favorite or illustrious person who thinks they know everything, yet really don't understand anything, which is funny because she hits on that all the way through this, biting at the ideas of their pretentious attitude, which is can be really funny if you play at it, and she does well. The thought of she drops in, yet how many politicians reel off their fancy speeches, yet they're good, very good, yet their every good intention never actually reaches the plight of so many on an actual daily level. Still, never mind in their rhetoric, we can always revel in the idea of, hey, you know what? You're going to offer up a boner, we're going to take full advantage of that and throw it back in your face. So, how about you? We're ready. Nice big dust clean.
Mm-hmm. All right, Gene.
We're back up to you.
Okay. That's a great piece. Okay. So, now, Laurent, I'm going to come back to you. And I almost posted it on Stellina's poem. I don't think it would have been understood. wow. This is worth it.
That would have been a disservice to her.
She'd have been like, what is she doing? So this is Word to the Wise by Laurent Yvonne. Whenever you're ready, Laurent.
Yes, ma'am. Word to the wise. Beyond the sweetened corpse of sighs regrets, beyond capacity to sustain what love begets, a confluence of desires that damn their lust, crossing of purposes sore lacking in trust, repulsion, compulsion, a warring of words, dynamics are frightful, flags flying unfurled. My angel, my demon, each one part of me, arousing delusions, exclusions decree. Wherefore and why for, 'tis a faint trail to follow. Circuits of reasoning I find difficult to swallow. So on to the abstract cessation of thought. No effort expended, it all comes to naught. Lightning is forked, and so are the tongues, oiling their proclivity towards incorrect sums. My mind's ill at ease, adrift in tendrils of fear. Rational purpose is pushed towards the rear. I yield to my ghosts who speak a strange truth, neither angels or devils, but humans in sooth. Imperfect and tainted, yet so beautifully painted, a triptych that wears the guise of the sainted, destined for sadness, perhaps glorious madness. Time leavens each with long years of gladness. Love and lust, shame and regret, bed together. Scarecrow loves his corn, bees love their heather. Respect's a strange game. It takes fortitude to accept what you hate and others' attitude. Person you hate, the face you despise, and become your best friend. This word to the wise. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what do you think?
Well, it was wonderfully written. Absolutely. Lots of great couplets here. Gosh, where should I begin to pick them up? I think it was, I don't know, it was well said, Laurent, as always. I mean, I can't take that away. The rhyme is great. I like the use of couplets in this one. Beyond the sweetened corpse of sighs regrets, beyond capacity sustain what love begets, a confluence of desires that damn their lust, crossing of purposes sore lacking in trust, repulsion, compulsion, a warring of worlds, dynamics are frightful, flags flying unfurled. My angel, my demon, each one part of me, arousing delusions, exclusions decree. just it just rolls off the tongue and was beautifully done. I don't know. It says a lot of stuff, doesn't it? Nicely done. But yeah, you never know.
That's all right, Gene. I'm still struggling with the meaning myself.
Well, you know, it says friendship, trust, understanding, and respect. You know, they were the words you put in there. So, I mean, it says a lot.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The person you hate, the face you despise, can become your best friend, just word-wise. Yep, nicely done. Well written.
Thank you, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Mm-hmm. All right. For me, this kind of hits on the idea of assessing oneself later on in life. Yeah, because you hit right up beyond the sweetest corpse of sighs and regrets, beyond capacity to sustain what love begets, a confluence of desires that damn their lust, crossing the purpose of soul lacking in trust. I like that note right there. There's the strength that what we held in our convictions when younger. Now we kind of hit on the idea of questioning at the back end of things, because you hit on also my mind's ill at ease, adrift in tendrils of fear, rational purposes pushed towards the rear, and you hit roll into that. I yield to ghosts who speak a strange truth, neither angels or devils, but humans in truth. You allude to that angels or devils before, but this one it's on the idea of those voices you didn't listen to or maybe ignored at one point in time, and now they hold a strange note of truth later on. And you hit the thought of sadness, glorious madness, time leavens each with long years of gladness. So there is a note to understanding, maybe looking at a bit more at self, grabbing empathy for others, because you do hit on that by one. The person you hate, the person you despise, can become your best friend. But that also kind of hits on the idea, is that the person you look in the mirror and ask questions about in the meantime? Because there's a kind of a note to remorse and regret. So there is that idea of what one has done. There's maybe a little guilt that holds on. And the idea of this word to the wise kind of hits me with the idea of maybe one should take that note to promise to oneself. If you're wise enough to walk this path and open up a bit more, and maybe you should be wise enough to listen to yourself.
Well, you know, I got to say that you opened my eyes a little bit. I think I tried to write this about people in general and the world in general, you know, trying to get along and what happens to... But I never thought to include myself in trying to understand precisely what it was I'd written. But, yeah, there is that. And I do appreciate... Great deal, that little bit of insight. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I get things right now, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
All right. Okay. Where do you want to go next?
I don't know, but I want to try this one. It's called Parental Responsibility by Terry Owen. And I'm going to give this one a read. I don't need it quite that large. Parental responsibility. I've never felt this empty before, like a house with no windows and a bare floor. Needed but not loved, not cared about. The emptiness is so loud, especially if I stand and shout. Everything has gone, muscle, heart, and bone. All that remains is a shell carved from stone. Funny how I'm an inconvenience, yet you cause the pain. Just like complaining once, you have caused me to go insane. Oh, shoot. I'm not a scab you can pick off and throw away. I'm your daughter, and you should love me till your dying day. Emotional neglect, lifelong effect. As a father, you should make sure I'm not harmed by a single touch. However it turned out, you loved me too much. As a mother, you should love me and teach me about life. Instead, I was taught to pursue men who already have a wife. Are you too proud of how I turned out to be? Or do you prefer to turn your head and take no responsibility? You both killed me in one way or another. I never stood a chance with you as a father and you as a mother. Did you not read the part about providing love and protection? Or how about the part about appropriate levels of affection? I'm now a result of you two and the fantastic parenting skills. Just know I live with it every day and it kills. Whatever I did for you to show me such hate, I refuse to allow it to determine my fate. I hope you grow old accompanied with regret, because a neglected and damaged child will never forget. End the poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And damn, there's a lot to unpack in this one. What do you think, Ron?
Well, I'm thinking that this is at the extreme end of emotional parental neglect. When she says, I've never felt this empty before, like a house with no windows, a bare floor, you're just talking about a box. There's nothing in that box. It should be filled and crammed with wonderful things. And when you find out you're needed but not loved or cared about, the emptiness of that box, it just, you know, it resounds. It takes over everything. She says everything is gone, muscle, heart, and bone. All that remains is a shell carved from stone. I guess every parent, myself included, stands damned at some point or another. On hopes without consistency. Because we always manage to hurt those we love. Never meaningful about it, but this shows a level of neglect. And more than that, a level of resentment and the damning of her parents that stings. It's filled with bitterness. It's filled with anger. But it's a controlled, cold anger, almost a quiet fury. There's no shouting involved. There's a withering look and a promise that a neglected and damaged child will never forget. Powerful stuff. Powerful.
Absolutely. Great comment, Ron. Thank you. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, I wrote here, it comes a time to purge, to just let go of the anger and the disappointment, and it comes a time to move forward and heal. And that's what I get from it, because in her author's notes, a poem I wrote a few years ago, it has been a really hard decision to share, but it's time to let go. And she's absolutely right. Get it out of the system. I mean, I'll never make it go away, but, you know, it kind of cauterizes it a little bit. You know, that cauterization hurts in its own way. But it stops that bleed, and I think that says something. So it was a nice cathartic write, and well done.
Absolutely, great comments, you too. And I'll roll on to that one. I too saw that note. There is, because that last stanza kind of fits with that note, there is a need in the moment to get past that, and you can't do that without actually, as you open cathartic, open that wound and let it just go. Let the blood flow clean instead of leaving its scar as a forever note. Because this hit that last, a neglected and damaged child will never forget. Yes, but it doesn't mean you have to wear it. So innately, that it destroys everything around you. And I think that's the idea of finally letting this piece out so that move can be made. So nicely done, Terry. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, fellas. Rex, I have this one for you to read. Just trying to figure out where the hell it was coming from. Okay, this is Aftermath by Matt29.
Aftermath by Matt29. My time away seemed like some kind of hell. The letters I wrote to you made it more bearable, sharing a falsehood of enjoyable escapades, knowing your love was hidden in your rebuffs. I was lost in the tapestry of those emotional walls, not knowing who I was, suffering adolescence, writing the pavement of privacy alone and hurt, longing for an expression of your devotion. Now years later, these letters are hibernating, waiting for a time to shoot up like plants. Blossom once rejuvenated with your love, Sadly, your memory has faded like flowers. Frailty arriving, I twist and erode your love. My words fall, scattered amongst thorns and thistles. And bone. All right, Jean, let's start with you.
No, I guess, sorry, I got to throw Laurent under the bus. I have to go back and read it again. I was somewhere else. Sorry.
Well, all right, Laurent. Step into view.
That's highly unfortunate, since I was about to say the same thing. Throw her under the bus, but by golly, she beat me to it. Now, by time away seemed like some kind of hell. Letters I wrote to you made it more bearable, sharing a falsehood of enjoyable escapades. So your love was hidden in the rebuffs. He can present any kind of reality that he wants to in the letters that he writes. And the things that he wrote in the past have been, as he says, hibernating, waiting for a time to shoot up like plants, blossom once rejuvenated with your love, yet that love has faded. Those words that were so important have fallen, scattered amongst thorns and thistles. It is so palpably sad and melancholy, almost written in despair, if you will. Wow, what's left? The aftermath. That's a very moving piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, how about you?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to take a shot at it. I think that, first off, this was prompt was another poem by Amy Lowell, and I don't know what one it is. I guess maybe it was called Aftermath. I have no idea. But my time away seemed like some kind of hell. Letters I wrote to you made it more bearable, sharing a falsehood of enjoyable escapades, knowing your love was hidden in your rebuffs. I was lost in a tapestry of emotional walls. You know, when you start to read it, you know, you go, okay. You get these love letters traveling back and forth between the two. But then where is it? Now, here we go. Now, years later, these letters are hibernating, waiting for a time to shoot up like plants, blossom once rejuvenated with your love. Sadly, your memory has faded like flowers. So it was a romance in letter form that died off and, you know, withered and didn't survive, is what I gather, you know. And I think that there's a wonder in the original writing of these letters. You know, it was all wonderful and what have you. But then as it faded, you know, now it's my words fall scattered among thorns and thistles. You know, there's a sadness and a bitterness in that loss. And that's what I see in this. And, you know, I hope I'm kind of right. You know, if not, maybe I should have just passed. But I think it was a great job, Matt. I really do. I wish I had seen the original prompt. I would have maybe given me just a little bit of a guideline in my mind. But I think that's what it is. Well done. Well done for sure.
All right. Thank you, Jean. I'm going to go with useful love. Letters I wrote to you made it more bearable, sharing a falsehood of enjoyable escapades, knowing your love was hidden in your rebuffs. There's a note that rebuffs. He's getting rejected, yet he doesn't want to admit that note of the rejection. Lost in a tapestry of emotional wails, not knowing who I was, suffering adolescence, riding the pavement of privacy, alone and hurt. So he does know, but he still holds on to that ideal thought of youth in the moment. And then he comes across the letters, goes that sort of waiting a time to shoot up like plants. Blossom once with you with your love. Again, that note going back to what was in his own mind. Yeah, what he does find is his words falling flat, scattered amongst thorns and thistles. The idea of walking back into the pain and confusion of that time. So So, nicely done, Anne. Thank you very much. And we're back to you, Jean.
Oh, you're always back to me, Jean. Next one I'm going to put up, because I think we have time for one more, is I'm going to put up a piece by S. Sharp. And maybe, there we go. Maybe I can do it this way. This bouncing all over. Here we go. This piece is called When the Rain Comes by S. Sharp. So, and I have an audio for that one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
When the rain comes, it's like smoking in a bathroom in high school, strangely exhilarating, lungs filled with sunshine, but like running naked on the beach, not wearing sunscreen, feathery pin left unprotected. Life becomes strange. A bird rolls in the mud. Fingers tap temples. Light angles through the gaps. Shades close to everything but sound. Through the window, I hear crows squawk about meaning. They crow and squawk. I squirm, a worm pushed up and out by an evening downpour. Outside, birds chattering. Inside, keys tapping. Squawking, talking, silence, sustained silence. I part the shades with two fingers. The crow has the worm in its beak. The worm wins again.
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the sound card. Much appreciated. All right, Lalonde, what do you think?
I listened to it, but you're going to have to skip me on this one. I'm sorry.
All right. Gene, come on. Oh, we're getting talk back to you. But you got to unmute her.
She's loving that mute tonight. She has too much mute for Thanksgiving, you see. It's a separate side dish. It's served al dente.
I love the mute button. Nobody, you know, nobody picks on me over there. Wow. I don't know. Obviously, I'm trying to keep up here. When the rain comes, it's like smoking in a bathroom in high school. Strangely exhilarating looks. Like running, really running naked on the beach, not wearing sunscreen. Hoo-hoo. That's called aftermath. Sorry. Oh, God, I don't know, guys. You got to give me a minute on this one. Rex, go ahead. You go first. Let's throw you under the bus.
Okay. It kind of hits me with that idea of smoking in the bathroom in high school, strangely exhilarating, lungs filled with sunshine. I'm hitting to the angle of this found illumination within that that feathered pen. Unprotected in the moment. The idea of what we see and deem and feel in the moment, the idea of being caught, so to speak, in the moment. And all of a sudden, because you got the keys tapping, you got the birds chapping, and you're squawking, talking, silence, sustained silence. Uh-oh. Then you look out the window, see, who's here? Am I caught? I like that.
I'm so confused. I'm so confused. I'm going to have to write something on this, but I'm going to have to reread it a couple more times because I got to catch up with it. Wow. I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm still not making any sense. Oh, my God.
Well, think of the worm. Think of the worm in ways you use it. In and out, like the being pulled out of the ground.
I know, but then he says the worm wins, so I'm so confused.
There's a nice intonation to sexual behavior in there.
I'm not getting into it. I get confused enough. Don't you mislead me. Anyway. Jeez.
Don't panic. That's the important part.
I'm not telling you. We have 10 seconds left to go. I'm going to have to stop and think about this before I can write anything, because I have to, like, kind of really think about it. It must have been a really long day or something. But, Scott, I appreciate you sharing with us. And Rex figured it out. I have not. And, you know, I don't know what the hell Laurent's been up to, but he passed. So he should leave you something. Anyway.
Well,
yeah. You just wanted to throw me under the bus. See?
No,
you did it.
No.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Don't lie.
I don't see tire marks.
Yeah. You haven't had a chance to look yet. Oh, God. So listen, everybody, I want to thank everyone who put poems up on the board for tonight. We have a few carryovers for next Friday, and I'll be sure to post them up tonight on the next board. Liquid Mind Forever. And, Scott, I will be posting a comment to your poem. It's just going to take me a few, you know. It's what happens when you fall behind in your thoughts. And, Laurent, thank you for calling in and joining us all night. And Rex, thank you for co-hosting with me as always. It was fun. Yes, lots of poetry. And wonderful poetry, a lot of it. So tonight, be sure to join Faziana and Pam for the Part Sinner, Part Saint. And tomorrow night, there is no Exploring at Crisis. I'll be putting up a repeat performance. So anyone who wants to listen in. And, that being said, I hope everyone has a great night and a great weekend. And I'll see you all on Sunday with Rex. Rex, what's our Sunday show?
After the Eagles, that would be Don Henley.
There you go. Sounds good. Okay, everybody, you got the word. Hopefully we'll see you there. And I hope everybody has a wonderful night. Thank you.
Good night, John.
Night.
Good night.